If you make that little oof noise every time you stand up, yeah, that's your knees talking. Go see Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief covered by Medicare, 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
So it was in 1991 that we started talking with Les on the phone, but it was 5 years before he was able to work out a gig here in Chicago. Remember how excited we all were? You were our producer at that time.
Yes, Colin. That's right.
And he said, I'm coming to Chicago. And we could hardly believe it. We just
because even after all these years of talking to him on the phone and developing a good friendship with him, we'd never met him in person.
Right. And Paula, you had wonderful conversations with him off the air as well for those times that you would call him and ask him if he would do the show with us.
Absolutely. And I spoke with Russ as well, his son.
Right. He's a wonderful guy, too. And so in 95, he comes to the House of Blues.
96.
Excuse me, 96, 5 years later, 5 years after we had met him and had numerous, probably we have 50 hours worth of interviews with him over the years.
And I can still remember walking into the House of Blues and just my impression the first time I saw him up on stage and saw him playing, and I just thought, even after all these years of talking with him, I thought, that's Les Paul.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was kind of a pinch me moment. And this was a case of he told us on the air in preparing to come to Chicago that he was going to come over and do the show afterwards. Well, again, Paula was our producer. She was there in the audience. We were out on a school night. That was huge for all of us to, you know, to come downtown to a show early and then know that we were going to go stay up all night on the radio.
Now, to set it up, after his House of Blues show, he was supposed to do kind of a meet and greet for Gibson Guitars with a lot of dignitaries. And Paula, you want to fill us in on the rest of the story?
Well, sure. If I could back up first,
sure.
Was whenever I went over there initially to meet Russ and Les.
Mm-hmm.
So I did. I headed over to the House of Blues, and my brother Joe was with me. So I spoke to a fellow there at the House of Blues, a representative, an employee, and I said, hi, I'm Paula Cooper. I'm with WGN Radio. I'm supposed to, you know, meet with Les Paul and his son Russ, and he's going to be coming over to WGN for an interview after the show. And he says, well, they're eating dinner right now. So I said, well, where's that at? And so I looked around and I saw them, Russ and Les, but I didn't want to bother them. So I gave them a little time and I looked around. And whenever I came back, I saw that the table was empty. So then I saw the same fellow, and I said, oh, I said, can you tell me where they went? And he said, oh, they went to their room. They were tired, and I don't think they're going to be interested in doing the interview with you. So I smelt a rat, because I had talked to Russ beforehand, and we had made arrangements to meet there. So I started looking around, and I saw Russ, and I said, Russ, I said, I'm Paula Cooper with WGN Radio. He held out his arms, and he pulled me to him, gave me a hug, and he says, we've been wondering where you were.
Oh.
And that's where I knew that guy was fibbing to me.
Mm-hmm.
So this is whenever I get my brother Joe, and I said, you know, Russ, this is my brother Joe. Would you mind? He's going to be driving you over to the radio station after the concert. Would you mind if he just kind of sticks with you? And he says, not at all. So I took Joe to the side, and I said, don't let anyone pull you away from them. You make sure you stay close to these guys, and they get to the radio station.
Uh-huh.
And he did.
Yeah.
So then after the show, my brother helped load Russ and Les's guitars and that beautiful black guitar of his into his car. And there were lots of people. It was exactly like Mike said and Tommy said. Everyone said that he meted and greeted everyone there. And he felt bad, you know, that he couldn't stay and meet everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So then they drove over here. My brother was going to try to bring him down on Lower Wacker, you know, in Lower Michigan. And so my brother got turned around and he said, oh, Les, I bleeped up. And he said the bad word.
Uh-huh.
And he realized what he said, and he apologized. And Les said to him, he goes, listen, kid, don't worry about it. I bleep up all the time. So Joe managed to bring him up here to Upper Michigan Avenue. Mm-hmm. And that's where he was brought into the studios. And that's where he stayed, as you know, until
all night,
all night long.
Remember, for over 3 hours.
It snowed that night.
Yeah. And then there were the three kids. I think they were on their way back to Michigan or Wisconsin.
No, they were from Wisconsin. Remember,
they
couldn't get in the House of Blues because they were too young.
And then they heard Les on the radio, and they turned around, and they came back here to the radio
station. So they're driving in this snowstorm, going north back home, and they were bummed because they wanted to meet Les Paul. And they had to be under 21 because they didn't let him in the House of Blues. So they got down back back down to the radio station, and they thought, well, you know what? We'll just take our chances and see if we park the car, if we can maybe get to meet him. And they stood around out in the Tribune lobby for hours. And I guess a security guard felt sorry for them.
Actually, it was Aubrey Mumpower, the engineer that night. Yeah. And Aubrey came in and he said, hey, there are these kids. You know, he goes, let's bring them in. So we took them in over to what is now the green room. It was the music room or something at the time. And that's where they stayed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And then they got to listen and not just stand around in the cold. And so they listened. And then we told Les that there were a couple of kids that had come down from Wisconsin. And boy, that's all he needed to hear. And remember, they had two guitars.
They did.
And the one guy opened up his guitar and he said, would you please sign my guitar, Mr. Paul? And he said,
sure. And that was a Gibson.
And it was a Gibson guitar. And he signed it. And he said to the other kid, well, what about you? And the kid sheepishly kind of shuffled around. He said, well, it's a Fender guitar. He said, give it to me. And he opens up the guitar and he says, yep. And he signs it boldly across the front of the guitar and he hands it back. And he says, now you got a Les Paul. And the kid was so happy. I love that story. And that was the same night that, unbeknownst to Steve, I had purchased this beautiful Black Beauty, Les Paul Black Beauty. And I'd had the back of it prepped so that the varnish had been taken off so that it could be signed. And we had a gold paint pen, and Steve was just so high off of being in the presence of Les that we were able to steal him away. You took him back into one of the office areas.
But then Les decided to sign just the back of it, the little plate on the back.
Right.
And as he said, in case I decided I didn't like him sometime, I could just take the plate off the guitar and replace it. Like,
so
that's going to happen.
I had the whole back ready for him to just boldly sign it, and then we were going to revarnish it. And he just put it on this little, like, 6x6 square plate that you screw off. And can, he said, well, then he can just, you know, replace it. But remember, he practiced with a pen on a couple of sheets of paper.
And, which we still have. And Paula saved them. And it was a nice Christmas gift. We have Les's practice.
He tossed it in the garbage, and I saw him do that. And boy, I got that out really quick. And I said, well, I'm saving that, because he was practicing his signature for your guitar.
I love that he would sit there. Yeah. And he'd done a show, did a meet and greet, sat here with us for hours, and then he's sitting back there, and he's just so meticulously practicing with this pen to get it just right so he could sign the back of the guitar.
Well, let us take you back now to that the cold December night in 1996. And this was the first time that we had met Les face-to-face in the studio.
When he walks in the room, all of the guitar players just say, we're not worthy.
We're not worthy.
Stop it.
And we had the pleasure of seeing him at the House of Blues tonight, and he was nice enough after a long day to come on over to the studio. Les, it's a real pleasure to meet you in person.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you for being here.
What a great show tonight.
It was.
Thank you. You know what? I was just listening to that, and if it wasn't for Mary, I wouldn't be here. Believe me, if it wasn't that way. And the interesting thing is that started here in Chicago.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And that's so wonderful. I'm just daydreaming here. I'm just thinking back how wonderful it was when I was at the St. Lawrence Hotel, Mary and I.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Mary, all the way driving, says, but what if it doesn't work? I says, it'll work. It'll work.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the invention of the sound-on-sound tape machine.
Yeah. Is that right?
At the St. Lawrence Hotel.
Now, was that, am I right or wrong on this, that kind of stemmed from a gift that you got from Bing Crosby?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Bing just came over to the house and he said, because I talked him into the tape machine, he said to me, I got a present for you out in the car. So I walked out with him thinking it was going to be Kraft cheese or Philco radio. And he lifted the trunk up, and it's a tape machine. We carried it in the backyard, and he says, now, play with that. And so I was recording in my garage with two disc machines, and Mary was hanging the laundry up on the line outside. And I said, Mary, I got it. I got it. And I had it written out on an envelope. How to make sound on sound, multi-track recording on one tape machine. We got in the car, drove to Chicago with the tape machine in the trunk, and she says, what if it doesn't work? And by the time I got to Illinois, I was sure it wouldn't work. And Mary scared me to death. We're at the New Lawrence Hotel, And the fourth head come in from Ampex. They didn't know what it was for, but I said I blew a head. I needed another head. And I didn't want to tell anybody my invention may not work. And Mary says, what do you want me to do? And I said, just say 1, 2, 3, 4 testing. 1, 2, 3, 4 testing. I says, well, then go hello. So she went, hello, 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 hello. And we played it back, and it said, 1, 2, 3, 4 testing, hello, hello, hello. I threw my crutch in the air because I'd had an automobile accident and I was a mess. I threw the crutch in the air and we danced around the room in the new Lawrence Hotel. That's on Lawrence Avenue. Mm.
Right.
And we cheered and hollered how great it was. We went to work at the Blue Note with the great thing that the tape machine could do, multi-track recording.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was very exciting, right here in Chicago.
Now, before that, you had been recording sort of direct-to-disc.
Yes, and two disc machines.
And again, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way you were doing it then was you would sort of do one, then you'd have to record another, but if you made, like if you were into the eighth generation, you made a mistake.
You could just go back one.
Okay.
But with the tape, the sound-on-sound tape, that invention was a little rougher. You could do everything on one little tape machine, but not little, it was big.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The problem was, is if you make a mistake, we recorded a basement, How High the Moon was in the basement in Jackson Heights, right next to a fire department. So the alarm would go off, and dang, 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 and the sirens go off, and we blew How High the Moon. Went the second time, a plane goes to land at LaGuardia, we're dead. Start over at one. And the worst part was that Mary had to sing the last parts first. Otherwise, you lose in the generations down. Mm-hmm. So Mary sings the fifth part first. I play a line that's unimportant, a rhythm part, a line that's unimportant. And as we work our way to the end, 30 takes, then we're playing the melody and the bass lines, the most important parts.
Mm-hmm.
By the time we get there, if we make a mistake, it's back to one.
Oh, unreal.
Those days are gone. So Slash, whoever, playing the guitar. George Benson may take a year. Eric Johnson may take 10 years to get it correct. Mm-hmm. We had to do it in 2 hours. How High the Moon took 2 hours.
Do you recall what song you did the most overlays on?
Yes, one that wasn't released that I made for Bing for one of his shows, radio shows.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Night and Day.
Hmm.
Never released yet. It's still sent home. 37 parts.
Mm.
Why was it never released?
It just wasn't as good as some of the other things. How High the Moon sat at Capitol for a year, and they didn't think it was commercial. And the president said, listen to it. Somewhere there's music, How High the Moon. Doesn't it make sense? I says, well, Anita O'Day sang it. It made sense. Well, they weren't listening to the lyrics. Well, what makes you think they're going to listen to the lyrics now? So I said, why don't you put it out? It took a year, and finally they decided to put it out. And Jim Conklin came to Chicago and wired me from Chicago and said, you got a hit. And Dave Garraway was the one that broke Lover, broke many of the hit songs for us right here in Chicago.
But you weren't really surprised when How High the Moon became a hit.
No.
What's a song that comes to mind that when you were told it's a hit, you said, what? It is?
Oh, Nola.
Nola?
Yeah, a guy come in my backyard. He says, can I try my accordion? I says, okay. So he goes, so I go to bed that night and I says, you know, he's playing that too fast. He should go, so he could walk to the men's room. You know, if you're dancing on the floor, you don't have to dance. You just walk to the men's room. And I says, hey, he's playing it too fast. So I got dressed, went out in the backyard, made the thing, took it down to Capitol and gave it to him. Forgot about it. And when Mary and I went to New York from the New Lawrence, the thing came out and it was a hit. Mary and I didn't have a radio. We were broke.
Oh.
And we're in New York making How High the Moon and did not know that Nola was number one, that it was a hit song.
Wow.
It's a crazy world.
Yeah, it is.
It is crazy. Yeah.
What do you think after a night like tonight? Now, we saw you over at the House of Blues, and you did two sets. The first set was you and your group. What a great group you've got.
Oh, thank you.
Good. Good people. But what do you think after a night like tonight? Here you are, Slash comes out on stage to work with you. Some other people come out.
He's sure different, isn't he? He come out stripped to the waist with his hat on the last half of the show.
Oh, no.
He was terrific.
Really? Yeah.
They all were terrific.
Yeah.
It turned out very good, the second part. The first part, we struggled around a little bit.
Wonderful.
What do I think about the House of Blues?
When you do an experience like tonight, what do you think about that?
I think I'm the most lucky guy in the world to put in 81 years and go out of the business like I went into the business. A very lucky guy.
Hmm.
When I was here in 1929, when this was Sam and Henry at WGN, there's a few of us out there probably remember that.
Mm-hmm.
But what a great thing that is. To be here at the beginning of jazz in Chicago with the Art Tatums, with the Roy Eldridges, and all those great, great, wonderful players.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came to Chicago, there wasn't one electric guitar player, no jazz players, so the guitar was nothing. And when I came here and had to make up an electric guitar, I went over to Bell and Howell and ask if I could get one half of the projector. Didn't want the projector, just wanted the amplifier with that long hose on it. I says, give me that thing with the box with the handle and the speaker. And when I told them what I was going to do with it, they gave it to me. Bell and Howe, here in Chicago.
Huh.
That's how I started.
Then did you go back in your hotel room and you start tinkering? Because your mind is it's amazing. You knew this would work, right?
I didn't know anything would work. And you know why I invented these things? Is because you couldn't go over to Guitar Center and buy one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't buy it, why you invent it or make it? It's survival.
Huh.
So there wasn't a multi-track machine, so you invent one.
Wasn't electric guitar, so I'll make one.
Yeah. But when I walked to Gibson, which was in Chicago.
Right.
Okay. And I went to the Gibson people with this log with some strings on it, a 4x4 log, and says, here's the way it should be done.
You're not kidding. It really was a log,
it was,
right?
You still got that,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, I got it. I
oh,
got it.
Boy.
And they labeled me the character with the broomstick and the pickups on it. And they laughed at me for 10 years. And finally called me and says, hey, come in here with that thing. Let's do something with it. And if it wasn't for Leo Fender in my backyard say, unless you're going to do something with that log, I said, I'm going to wait for Gibson. He didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And he rattled their cage. Then they called me and said, hey, you want to come in here and do something with your guitar?
How much did that weigh?
It weighs a ton. That's why my back. That's why I'm going to the Mayo Clinic.
Really?
They told me, get rid of your guitar.
Ay, ay, ay.
I'm kidding you.
You better be kidding.
I am. Oh,
like
God.
An amputation.
I can hear
yeah.
You know, the president saying
some guy just
people jumping out of windows.
No, if you listen to the show tonight with Slash and everything, it was wonderful the fact that you could hit one note and you could go out and eat and come back and it's still playing. Sax player can't do it. The piano player can't do it. You got to get a plank of wood that makes it talk like that.
Right.
And that's what that's all about. Yes, I'm very, very, very touched by going over, not titched, touched, to go over to the House of Blues. It is something. It is probably the most rewarding thing that you can think of, you know.
It amazes me, too. This is the first time, other than seeing you on TV or watching videos of your appearances at Fat Tuesdays, this is the first time I've ever seen you perform live. And this was a night I would not have missed for anything. What amazed me is you still seem to be enthusiastic. How many thousands of times have you played How High the Moon, and yet tonight when you're doing it, you're still throwing some fresh stuff in there.
But, yeah, you don't play it the same.
Mm-hmm.
David Merrick asked me if I'd do a show on Broadway, Hello, Dolly.
Mm-hmm.
And I says, David, in all fairness, I don't want to do it because I'd be changing it every show. And so if you play the same, you don't improve.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're out looking and searching, you try something different. You feel different. You don't feel the same every time. So why should you do it the same way? So you create something new. Sometimes it's not as good. Well, then you don't do that again, right? But you do improve.
So when you go out, do you have a particular song that helps you read the audience, or do you just say, I'm going to dive in with both feet and see what feels right?
You dive in, and if it don't stick on the wall, you change it in a hurry. So when I go out and throw a line or play something, and there's not a response to it, I say, well, I won't go there again.
Uh-huh.
Right? And so you're constantly feeding. Let me give you an example. In Chicago, at the Blue Note, I said to Mary, we got a problem. We're great on Mondays. We're pretty good on Tuesdays. Wednesday, well, fair. Thursday is a maid's night out. They're coming down from Evanston. I says, this is no night for anybody. Friday, they start preparing to get drunk. Saturday night, guy says to the old lady, yeah, let's go out. Let's go out, you know. And he just hangs it on, talks, argues, whatever it is. You can't control Saturday night at all.
Yeah.
So I said, Mary, Monday night, you got Ella Fitzgerald, you got Benny Goodman in the audience. They're a piece of cake. But Tuesday night, they got the waiters and the bartenders on Tuesday. But Wednesday, it starts getting difficult and gets worse.
Huh.
So you got to play for Monday and Saturday something that fits both Monday and Saturday. And that's tough.
Mm-hmm.
So when you play How High the Moon, said to Mary, let's go. So when we're in Terre Haute, Indiana, it's as great any night of the week. So in Terre Haute, Indiana, in Chicago, Rock Island, Illinois, New York at the Paramount, it's the same. You get them on Mondays, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. That's the key.
Yeah.
And there you have to read your audience.
We were talking, though, off the air, Les, about reading your audience tonight.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to look around and see that, in fact, you have your 20-somethings all the way up to your, you name it, responding to, for example, How High the Moon.
Yeah.
That's a great feeling. I mean, you feel the buzz in the audience. They're plugged into you when they hear songs like this, and you think, well, okay, then this is working. This is, you know, no generation. This is working.
But you see, Perry Como doesn't have that. And I was very fortunate that I invented the guitar, created the solid body electric guitar that does these things with the engineers, the fellow in the control room. I know Les Paul because he did this and this and this. The echo, the delay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These things are something that a person like Perry Como, someone like that, doesn't have. They don't have the things to lean on to bridge the gap. The kid today, 15 years old, he says, Les Paul, yeah, I know him.
Mm-hmm.
But he only knows me as a guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But then he says, oh, he's a guy, is he? Well, you know. So Perry can't, you know, he doesn't have a Perry Como guitar.
Gotcha.
So
that's a little bit of a, and we'll let you hear more of that. We've got a lot to play for you of some of the conversations we had over the past 18 years with Les Paul.